Hey everyone, I'm Rob Stats-Guerrera.
And I'm Michael Kist.
And you need to subscribe to the SB Nation NFL Show, SB Nation's daily NFL podcast that covers the National Football League from every angle.
On Mondays, we'll break down all the action and news from Sunday's games and hand out awards for special plays and performances.
On Tuesdays, we reset the state of the league, adjust our power rankings, and cover the biggest topics you need to hear about.
On Wednesday of the SB Nation NFL Show, we break down the game at a deeper level and analyze the best quarterback and defensive performances along with some of the best analysts in the industry.
On Thursday, we'll look ahead to the biggest games of the weekend and point you to key matchups to watch for.
And on Friday, you'll get all the tools you need to win big money with odds, betting lines, fantasy, and daily fantasy tips to prepare you for the week ahead.
So go search the SB Nation NFL Show on your favorite podcast app, subscribe now, and join us 5 days a week. The SB Nation NFL Show, SB Nation's daily NFL podcast you can't miss.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Seifer, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing this week?
Good.
I'm doing good. Well. Won my fantasy football league, you know, feeling nice. Good about that.
It's always good.
That's fun.
All right, so wasn't last week, 2 weeks ago, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. It was the shortest day of the year, and we did promote extend trade with the shortest players in professional sports. And today just so happens to be the 11th anniversary of the Burj Khalifa opening, and that is the tallest building in the world. So this week, we're going to do promote extend trade with the tallest athletes in professional sports. Unfortunately... Yeah, unfortunately, no one has a nickname as good as Soupy Shapiro.
Damn.
So, yeah, they probably all deserve to be traded because of that, but only one guy can go. So, who are we going to promote extend trade of these following guys? First, we have Loke Van Mill, who is a Dutch right-handed pitcher. He mainly played in the Twin system and for the Dutch national team, and he is 7 feet, 1 inch tall.
I want everyone to know that I spelled that correctly on my first guess, and I'm very proud of myself. It's L-O-E-K Van Mill.
Yeah, it's not too difficult. Loke, L-O-A-K,
wait,
I guess would be the only...
That's not how I would have thought to spell a name.
Well, I'm just saying, how else would you spell it? It's L-O-E-K or L-O-A-K.
Have you seen some of those Scandinavian names? They don't make any sense phonetically.
Well, he's Dutch, so.
Yeah, close enough. Anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway. Next, we have Sung Ming Ming, who is a Chinese basketball player who played in a bunch of minor league basketball teams here in the U.S. and then in the Chinese Basketball Association. And he is 7'9". And finally, we have Jorge Gonzalez, who is an Argentinian wrestler, better known as Giant Gonzalez, who wrestled for the WWF and is 7'7".
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the plane you get on your fastball if you're 7'7"?
Unfortunately, Van Mill wasn't particularly good.
Yeah, I'm looking... Not great stats.
No.
Pretty bad.
I mean, there have been really tall players who have been good. I guess the biggest example is John Roush, who had a pretty good career, but...
Literally the biggest example, am I right?
Yes, very good.
Nailed it.
Is he taller than Chris Young?
I think so. I think Chris Young is only like 6'6" or 6'9".
Really? I thought Chris Young...
I thought he was like 6'10".
I'm pulling it, Googling it right now. Now,
he
which
definitely
Chris
isn't.
Young?
He definitely isn't over 7".
No, yeah.
Well, I'll let you know the outfielder is 6'2", but that's not the one we're talking about.
He's a midget. What a little guy.
Chris Young was 6'10", John Roush was 6'11". Okay, so Roush was bigger.
Wow.
Neither of them with the really ran impressive strikeout ratios, honestly.
Mets legend, John Roush?
Yeah.
Nice
pitchers, being tall is not always a good thing because of all the command issues that it can cause.
You would think if you could get over that, though, you'd have, like, a fastball that would just do some – would really mess with hitters, but I guess not.
I would also think for me, at least, like, if you're a reliever, you're facing someone who's, like, your height, and then in comes a dude who you have to totally change your eye plane on.
Yeah, or absolutely.
Looking at, like, where you're picking up the ball and stuff. Mm-hmm. That would, I know that would mess with me, because I never liked – I'm not super tall, but I never really liked facing people much, much taller than me when I played. Because I hated the angle that it would come down on.
Like, you also have to think about, like, the thing DeGrom does so well. Like, he's not super tall. He's, what, 6'3 or something? But he gets so much extension towards home plate. You think these guys are, like, almost 7 feet tall.
Which yeah.
Practically yeah. be throwing the ball from 2 inches in front of home plate at that point. But I guess not.
DeGrom's also lanky as hell, which helps.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he has very long limbs. So he could really extend. And also, that's why he's good, you know? Like,
yeah. I mean, his fastball now is 100 miles an hour anyway, but like the perceived velocity before, it was probably above 100 just because he's so close to home plate. Anyway, I'm going to trade the wrestler because I don't give a shit about wrestling, and then I'll extend Luck Van Mill and promote the Sun Ming Ming.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
I traded Van Mill just because he wasn't good.
Yeah.
And like I was saying, like the height, sometimes it's just a liability in baseball. Yeah. Whereas in wrestling, being a giant dude would be, you know, good. But Giant Gonzalez is really bad, so that's, you know, ironic.
So let me ask you this. What makes a bad wrestler, Steve? Can you explain that to us plebeians?
I don't know. It's a very opinion thing.
It's also something that... I don't know, at least for me, when you see it, when you see someone who's bad, you're like, oh, that person is bad at wrestling.
Like bad at the acting portion of it because none of them can act.
It's like believability in moves that they're doing and receiving too. Like if they can't sell, it's also bad. But like, when you watch a really good wrestler, you'll be like, oh, I could see that being real. And then when you watch a really bad one, you're like, oh, that's a terrible punch.
What
like,
is this?
Yeah, like it's so weird.
There's a lot of opinion involved. I mean, there's different styles of wrestling. What That's some true. Person might think constitutes a good wrestler is not what I might think, and so on and so forth. But John Gonzalez was objectively a terrible wrestler.
He was a big boy.
Yeah, I think they just kind of used him because he was tall. I don't think he actually spoke English. He only spoke Spanish. He suffered from a lot of health problems, so he could, like, barely walk. And I implore you to look up Giant Gonzalez right now to see the kind of unitard, I guess, solid. To see his costume.
Jesus basically. Christ. What the hell? So he like couldn't get jacked enough on his own. So they gave him a bodysuit with muscles drawn on it.
Right.
And That's some not- hair.
Steve, can you say the name again?
Giant Gonzalez.
Giant Gonzalez.
It's not a good combination.
Isn't the point that they're all supposed to be jacked? Like, there's, like, two job requirements to be a wrestler, and he couldn't even meet one of them.
I like that they went with the fakest suit possible.
Yeah, the suit is, like, a terrible look, too.
Like, they could have, like, Benjamin Button some prosthetics for him, and they did not. And I think that... I respect that for some reason.
I have no idea.
Suffice to say, though, if he was not wearing that, maybe he would have gotten over better. But, you know, that was kind of doomed from the start.
Mm. Just because I was curious and looked it up, the tallest player currently in Major League Baseball is Glasnow at 6'8". So, no contenders to unseat Rauch or Luck Van Mill here currently.
Oh well, eventually I'm sure there has to be. It just statistics. All right, so on Friday, January 1st, we dropped part one of our 2021 top 25 prospect list, and if you haven't already seen it, it's on Amazing Avenue, so go ahead and, you know, read it. And we'll go on to a little bit more detail about the players on the list, 25 to 21, in a couple of minutes. But before we start, I just want to, you know, just kind of like have a discussion, I guess, with you guys. On a scale of 1 to 10, how hard was it to make the list this year? I mean, it's kind of difficult every year because there's a lot of stuff that you need to take into account, but with everything else, 2020 was kind of weird.
Can I give two answers?
Sure.
I'm going to say both 10 and 1 because on the one hand, finding any sort of order to this was near impossible because A, the system is a bunch of low minors guys we have no information about to begin with, and B, we have even less information than normal. But then one, the system's so bad that it almost doesn't matter after like 10 that you could have just drawn names out of the hat and it probably would have been fine.
Yeah, I was thinking about changing things up a little bit this year and having basically a top 10 and they're just doing like kind of two tiers of 10 players apiece that weren't, you know, numbered, but just kind of grouped in like, you know, these are guys that are interesting, but real far back, whatever. And these guys are kind of maybe interesting and just missed out on the top 10. But then I figured it's kind of, I like routine and that's just not how we do things. But yeah, this year a lot of stuff a lot of players are just really interchangeable.
And I always think this is like ranking people in a list order is always hard because there's always nuance to it that's difficult to parse even if they're in the same tier. But doing it when you lose a year of development with all of these kids and with the Mets case, all these kids are young. It's not like it was easy for us to say, oh yes, we could put Ronnie Mauricio 1. Like, yeah, he lost a year of development, but we know that he's still the best person in the system. But when you get down to it and it's a bunch of like 18 and 19 year old kids who we would have liked to see play to really get a view on what they're going to do next year, how do you separate them? Like, it's hard enough anyway. How do you separate them when we haven't seen them in a year? It's really difficult.
Major spoiler, Ryan Mauricio is ranked number 1.
Good job.
Was I the only one who didn't have him number 1? Probably.
I waffled a bunch of times. It really came down to me between Alvarez and Mauricio. And
I didn't have either of the number 1. Well, that would be an interesting discussion when
Tebow
we get to
one.
Tebow. Well, no, Tebow was 0. Excuse you.
Tebow is the list.
Yeah.
It was his own thing entirely.
Tebow's 1 through 25. And
Tebow doesn't even get a number. He's just Tebow. His own section.
I was trying to think. There is no like symbol of God. Like he's just Alpha and Omega. I guess that's his number.
He's the Jesus fish symbol.
Yeah, that's it.
At one, and then there's one right under it.
We also should mention, and there's been plenty of much more experienced, qualified prospect writers over the years than us who have written more extensively about this. But the whole list system itself, in and of itself, is flawed, and even more so when you have this little information. Because you could slightly alter the criteria you're making your list based on and the order is going to totally change. Like, do you care about imminent major league performance? Then maybe you have Harold Gonzalez like 9th. Do you care about long-term upside? Then Harold might miss your list entirely.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
That's one of the reasons why I like that there's 4 of us that we all kind of make a list that's then compiled and averaged out because that takes into account all of that kind of stuff. I know, Lucas, you're much more of a stats person and you're also much more of an upside person than, you know, me, on the other hand, where even still, and I guess this is a vestige of doing it longer where the system actually had guys worth, you know, more, where I still see, you know, short season stats, I still see rookie ball stats, I'm just kind of like, you know, it doesn't really matter much to me. Mm-hmm. So,
do you remember when the Met system had real prospects? Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Yeah, pretty much. I remember.
Oh, I remember.
Good times.
I can barely remember at this point.
I don't remember 5 minutes ago.
I remember when it was a hot topic of debate whether or not Wilmer Flores or Cesar Puello was the better prospect.
Good times. Oh, God.
Good
was
times.
Was the answer neither?
I think that Wilmer came up on top in our list. I want to say this is probably 2014 or 2013, maybe. I know that I flip-flopped him, and I had Puello higher because he was an outfielder, and Wilmer was kind of whatever he was at the time. I guess a quote-unquote shortstop, but
Wilmer's
yeah.
Like a solid player.
Wilmer
so.
Flores made yeah. a World Series quality shortstop.
Offensively.
Wilmer Flores has 7 career war, which is actually more than I thought he would have when I pulled up this sheet.
That's like 1.5 a year, basically.
Yeah.
Not bad. But yeah, it was getting back to it though. It was a lot more difficult than just saying like, oh, okay, Andrés Giménez and David Peterson graduated. Let's just slide everybody up a notch and replace, you know, 24 and 25. A lot more went into it than that. Hmm. All right. So, we will start out now by discussing the guy that came in at 25, and that's right-handed reliever Riley Gilliam. And this is the second time that he's been on our top prospect list. Last year, he was ranked 19. This year, he's ranked 25. Mets drafted him out of Clemson in the 5th round of the 2018 draft. He was the closer there and basically one of the best closers in college baseball at the time. He's been solid as a Met. The biggest thing about him, though, is he's pretty short for a baseball player. He's 5'10", so...
really not fitting in. We should have talked about him last week.
Yeah.
Yep.
But he's 5'10", so kind of on the small side. More, I guess, damning. I don't want to say damning. It's not the right word. But more concerning than that, though, is the fact that his delivery is just really high energy. And because it's so high tempo, he has command problems. You know, if he was a starting pitcher at 5'10", I would say maybe there might be some durability concerns. But, you know, he's only pitching an inning per outing. So realistically, if he's throwing more than 25, 30 pitches, something's already, you know, gone pretty wrong. So one thing, though, because of his height, though, is that the fastball doesn't have much plane. Like we were talking about before with Loc Van Mill, it sits in the low to mid 90s, about 91 and 94, so with some arm side life, not bad. But that lack of plane kind of makes it kind of hittable, which is unfortunate because he complements it with one hell of a curveball. I'm sure we've talked about this many, many times before, but it is just a beauty of a pitch. It's a high 70s, 12-6 curve. Gets lots of swings and misses. You know, he'll throw it a lot. Very effective. But overall, just kind of, he's a 1-2, two-pitch guy, you know, fastball curve, short guy, command issues. But definitely is a guy that if we had a regular season last year, he would have seen major league time in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to assume that, you know, next season he makes the MLB for however amount of time.
I agree. I don't know if he's going to be a good pitcher in the majors, but I think he will have major league appearances in his career. Like, I think like his stuff is going to be good enough. Like, he was bad. I'm pulling up his stats right now, but I remember off the top of my head he was not good at the higher levels. But
he had 9 innings in AAA. Yeah. Strikeouts were still there, but he also walked a dude every inning, so yeah. Not great.
And that's 9 innings, but yeah, you don't want that. But, like, he's going to be one of those dudes who, at the very least, is going to be a shuttle-type guy who gets called up and then gets waived after, like, a week. And that's fine at 25 in your system. Like, you probably want that to be off your top 25, but... like, right now, this is what we're at, so.
Useful to have. Not yep. particularly exciting. I wonder, see, I'm forgetting where I read this article this offseason about fastball plane and how shorter pitchers are better off throwing, like, rising fastballs because they look like they rise more because they're coming from, quote-unquote, rising.
Yeah,
right? Nothing actually rises. So, I don't I don't know the details on like his spin efficiency or his spin rate, whether he gets good backspin, whether his fastball has rise to it. But that I wonder if that's an adjustment that the Mets could look to make, or if it's something he could incorporate on his own. And it would go well with the slider too, like high fastball, curveball. High fastball, low curveball works pretty well. So there's stuff to play with here.
That's basically what Chris Flexen did in Korea to reinvent himself, is high fastball, low curve.
Pretty good combo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I love a good curveball, so I'd like to see Gilliam stick. Look, if we had to sit through Paul Sewald, we had to sit through, come on, 147 innings of Paul Sewald over the last 4 years, I would like to get a similar number of innings from Gilliam.
How many?
147 in the third.
Oh boy, I did not know it was that many.
Yeah, it didn't seem that many.
Yeah.
That's
cool. Hey, we like Paul Sewald. So freaking weird. He struck out more than 10 per 9 and didn't walk anybody. It was like not bad, but still felt bad. Anyway, give me more Riley Gilliam. I'm intrigued.
So my thing on Gilliam is he's either going to have to really spot. It's debatable whether he has enough fastball, to be have a meaningful career. And it's also debatable if he's going to command the curveball well enough to get big league hitters out. But, you know, there's a good chance he just comes up and is a shuttle guy for a while, and that's pretty great.
Was he at the alternative site last year or no?
Probably.
I would assume so. The fact that he didn't come up is, like, mildly concerning to me, right? You would think if he was actually showing decently in a season where they needed so many freaking arms, they would have given him a shot. But I don't want to read too much into that.
Into anything, the Wilpon Mets.
In the 2020 Wilpon Mets, yes.
I mean, that's big senioritis, Wilpon Mets, too. Like, like they were totally checked out, I feel. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he was balling, that they were just like, whatever. We don't care.
Yeah, we got to submit some paperwork. It's just too much work.
Just throw Jacob Rehm out there again.
At least he wasn't traded for, like, Todd Frazier, so we have that.
Right.
All right, next up, coming in at number 24, is right-handed pitcher Jordani Ventura. And this is the first time that he's been ranked. And the Mets acquired him during the 2018 or 2019 international signing period. They didn't sign him on the first day, July 2nd, but basically a couple of weeks later for just $20,000. He was, got a brief cup of coffee in the DSL that year and started the 2019 season in the DSL, but he got promoted to the GSL pretty quickly, the GCL pretty quickly. And he spent most of the summer with the GCL Mets. And then at the end of August, he was promoted to the Kingsport Mets in order to bolster their rotation. And he was solid in that cup of coffee. So, Ventura, he is lanky kid, 6 foot tall, 160 pounds, and, he's still pretty young, so he's probably still going to be growing. Also, worth noting is that this data is, a little old because we don't know what, he's been up to in the past year. So, he could have put on 5 inches and 40 pounds for all we know, which would obviously change things very, very much. But fastball sits in the low 90s. And then he complements it with a curveball and developing changeup. And it's basically the stereotypical young starter starting kit.
I mean, the age, the impressive number of strikeouts given his age in those leagues. And this is the kind of guy where we really get screwed by 2020 because who the hell knows what happened in the last 15 months. I don't know.
Yeah, so interesting dude to be aware of.
Yeah, he's big time circle the name just in case type guy.
I don't think he's not like a super projectable dude either, so I wouldn't get excited about him like growing 3 inches and adding 5 miles an hour to the fastball or something like that. But again, that's another thing that could just happen randomly sometimes. So this is like Gilliam, this isn't a name you want in your top 25. Not that Ventura is a bad piece to have around, but he'd hopefully get pushed off the list. It's not a good farm.
I would say yet. He's not a good guy to have here yet.
Right.
Right.
Because at this point.
Yeah. Because he should be a dude that is in people's names to remember for 2021 type mm-hmm. list.
There should be like multiple of this guy.
Yeah. Yes. And then when one of them pops, that's when they make the list. And you're
remember? A couple. I'd say the bottom of their farm is pretty good in terms of the international guys. It's just that that's it.
Yeah.
And that's also hard to discuss anyway. And it's even harder to discuss now when we're going to go through these names. We're going to be like, yeah, he was good 2 years ago.
This whole episode is basically just giant shrug emoji.
We don't know yet.
Would have been nice to have a minor league season.
Indeed.
Yep.
So I just looked up the just for shits and giggles to see if there's any like news from him out of Instructs or something. Whether there was latest tweets about Jordani Ventura. Here's the latest tweet about Jordani Ventura. A proposed trade for Nolan Arenado with J.D. Davis, Robinson Cano, Mark Vientos, Thomas Cipucci, and Jordani Ventura for Nolan Arenado.
Who can I ask? Who do I want to know? Who
did some match trades?
Unbiased picks. Some random account with not that many followers.
I'm more interested in knowing how they even know who Jordani Ventura is.
He was 18th on Fangraph's list, I think. I don't know.
Well.
Oh, here's someone proposing a trade for Josh Hader, too. Dom Smith, Mark Vientos, and Jordani Ventura for Josh Hader.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Biggest trade chip.
I don't think I'd do that. Anyway,
yeah. Oh, yeah, Hader is the kind of dumbass guy, that's right.
I wouldn't trade Dom for a reliever at this point, but.
And of all the people to be trading for Hader, Dom Smith, like, that's, come on now.
The irony.
We love it, folks. No, we don't. Mm-hmm. Coming in next at 23 on our 2021 top 25 prospect list is catcher Andy Rodriguez. And this is the first time that he was ranked by us. Mets acquired him on the first day of the 2018-2019 international signing period. And he didn't really get a lot of money. He only got $10,000, which, as we've discussed in the past, there is not a direct correlation between success and signing bonus when it comes to international free agent kids. But usually the ones that are more hyped and seem to be better at the time obviously get more money. But he was assigned to the DSL. He had a solid season there in 2018. He started the 2019 season again with the DSL team, but he got promoted to the GCL, and he spent the rest of the 2019 season there on the complex. He lost basically a month of the season due to a hamstring strain, but he had a pretty solid season all around. He hit 294, 411, 510, which, it's definitely what you want to see from a 19-year-old catcher. And it's a pretty interesting profile offensively and defensively. He's a switch hitter, so we like switch hitting. Yeah.
Yep.
Switch hitting catcher on the list. Mm-hmm.
Definitely what we want to see. He has a pretty good knack for making contact. He can hit the ball all fields. He drives a little bit better from the left side than the right side, but young hitters have platoon splits that reverse themselves a lot as they kind of learn and get better and tinker at the swings and everything like that. So that's not set in stone. And, most actual scouts agree that he's probably going to be a low power player, but he should grow into some usable in-game power, which is good. And behind the dish, he's been praised for his defense. He's pretty mobile, and he's good at receiving the ball and throwing it. And interestingly enough, he's also logged a lot of time at first base, which I guess as a catcher, it's like, okay, you're kind of hedging your bets. and in the outfield, which is something that you don't see too often with catchers, because catchers are usually slow, fat kids. But he is not.
I would imagine a good amount of that is just trying to get his bat into the lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, if he can't play catcher, which would be a pretty big hit to his value, because a lot of that value is tied to the fact that he is a catcher. If he shows enough range to play a corner outfield position, that's, you know, basically that's going to give him a second life.
Hey, sign me up for the Austin Barnesy utility piece on the bench, you know?
Yeah, I have, like, this weird thing that I would love my backup catcher to also play, like, three positions for no reason. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just, to me, it's just so, like, it's a way to really spread your bench out. But, like,
you must really love Isaiah Conner-Falefa.
Oh, yeah. I literally traded for him in a fantasy league last year. So, yeah.
But he's not good. Anyway.
I know.
What are your feelings on Kyle Schwarber? Noted catcher.
H, so. But, like, I don't know. I think it's cool when catchers could play other positions like that and really spread their wings a little bit. And if he could hit just a little, then that'll be a fun guy to look at. Even so, he's probably just playing other positions, so he doesn't have to catch every game and also hits every game. And I don't know if you care that much about your left field defense at that level of the minors when you're trying to get people to hit. So
rookie level left field defense.
Left field defense.
Like, I don't know how much you actually care about the ball that drops in the gap, because if the pitcher made, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's still a ball that got hit hard, and it's still, like, you just want the guy to hit. So that's probably what's going on there. But I'm a dream anyway.
Yeah, I mean, with these guys, it's all we can do is just dream on them. And it's a lot more fun anyway.
If he stays a catcher, he could be really nice. If he isn't a catcher, which, I mean, I almost want to say is likely, because that's true of, like, every low minors. Right. It's true of almost every low minors catcher that they're probably not actually a catcher. Then it's less interesting. But interesting IFA pick number two on the list.
Well, if you like interesting IFA picks, have I got something for you?
Here we go.
Have I got a system for you?
Yeah. Coming in at number 22 on our list is outfielder Stanley Consuegra. And this is the third time that Consuegra has been ranked by us. The first time was in 2019 when he was ranked 19. And then last season he was ranked 22. And again, here he is at 22. He was acquired by the Mets on the first day of the 2017 to 2018 IFA period, and he was signed for $500,000. He was considered one of the better athletes who were available in that class. He started the season with the DSL Mets, but given his, I don't want to say pedigree because that's not really the right word, but because of his, how highly thought of he was and his numbers, he was promoted to the DSL Mets pretty quickly. And he didn't exactly dominate in his stateside debut, but he held his own as a 17-year-old in the GCL, so not bad. And then he entered the 2019 season with a knee injury, and he had to have surgery on it, so his season ended even before it started. And then, of course, there was no season last year, so he has not been on the field for 2 years now, which is something. It's something.
Yep.
He is well-built at the time anyway. Again, who knows how things have changed, but, you know, going back to our reports from a year, 2 years ago, he was a 6'2" kid, 170 pounds. So he was pretty projectable. The swing was kind of long, but he had pretty good barrel control. So he was able to make good contact in spite of it. And, you know, he was kind of a line drive hitter, but he was projected to add some muscle and projected to add some in-game power. And defensively, he was an outfielder who prior to that was a shortstop, you know, and basically everyone is a shortstop or a center fielder. So, but, you know, he should hopefully have the tools to stay in center. He's a strong arm, basically. evaluators say it's above average to plus, so that's good for an outfielder, obviously. And then he has average speed and quick reaction times, so he can cover a decent amount of ground once he starts going. Given the arm, though, if he's not able to play center field, he definitely would be a fit in right field. So, again, not too much else to say, especially in Consuegra's case, since he's, you know, injuries and everything.
This is the kind of guy that you would hope you have enough depth where he's not in your top 25.
Yeah.
The guy who was intriguing for a time and is now currently, you know, 2 years having not seen the field.
Yeah, I think there's a longer discussion we can have, and maybe it waits till we're further up the list and we've gone through all of them, but the Mets have quite a few of these outfielders in this kind of...
Yeah, Adrian Hernandez is in the same boat.
Freddy Valdez, Alexander Ramirez, if you want to throw the stateside guys in there, like Isaiah Green and even Blaine McIntosh, and like, I don't know how you pick them apart really at this point, aside from just kind of, I don't even know, just guessing.
That's pretty much kind of all there is to it.
Yeah.
And if you want to, if you want to analyze things with an extremely fine-tooth comb, you can differentiate these guys. You could even, you know, you could tier them. But at the end of the day, even those slight minute separations, when you zoom back out, is just so minor that it doesn't really make much of a difference. For me personally, I think that the biggest thing that differentiates these guys is, and I don't mean to sound not racist, I don't know what the word would be, but you know, just that these guys are from the Dominican Republic, whereas a guy like McIntosh or Isaiah Green, especially Pico Armstrong, he's kind of in a separate boat because of his very advanced pedigree and everything. But they have more formal baseball education. They've played in more formal leagues, on more formal teams, things like that. Whereas, you know, the Dominican players, it's kind of more just practice constantly 24/7. And I think the organized experience weighs more heavily to me.
We also just have a ton of more information on them, right? Like we have access to a lot more scouting information about McIntosh, Green, or especially Pico Armstrong than any of the DSL guys. I think PCA also definitely is in his own group way above most of these guys, but I don't know how you differentiate the rest of them, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, on the macro level, it is very, yeah, they're all just in the same boat, basically, big lump. Right.
The answer is, like, you call your friend who is at Mets Instructs and ask what he thinks, but I don't, I lost his number, so.
Man, I hope that there's a spring training in the season next year.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, oh, God. All right, well, coming in now at 21, the last player that we're going to discuss today is outfielder Adrian Hernandez. And this is also the third time that we've ranked him. First time was in 2019 when he came in at 18. And then 2020 when he came in at 20. And now it's 2021 and here he is at 21. So, like Consuegra, he was acquired on the first day of the 2017 to 2018 international free agent signing period. He was given a pretty big bonus, $1.5 million. He played in the DSL that summer, and then he was sent stateside in 2019. But similar to Consuegra, he had an injury, and he missed most of the season. He got into 4 games, as opposed to Consuegra, who did not get into any games. When we last checked, Hernandez was Kirby Puckettish. He's 5'9", 210 pounds, so he's a dude that if there's a fight, you definitely want him on your side. He's going to mess guys up. The bat speed was explosive. It was, you know, one of the best in the 2017 to 2018 international rookie class. He's a strong guy, like I was saying, so it's plus power. The hit tool, though, is raw. It was basically just a very Guerreroian uppercut you know, that just kind of is vulnerable to a lot. You know, didn't really have a good awareness of the zone, didn't really have a good eye for spin, that kind of stuff. So you basically, what you want to see from him is just that that stuff develops, that he starts figuring out, okay, this is what the strike zone is. Okay, this pitch, it's going to be a curveball. Oh, it's not going to be in the zone. Okay, lay off. Because the rest of the power is good, and then the outfield, the defensive raw tools are good. He's got above average speed. You know, he's slow to start because he's a kind of big guy, but once he gets going, he's going. The arm is okay. It's, you know, good enough for center field, but not really good enough for right. So you just kind of hope that he's going to be able to stay in center because the value will be maximized there. Whereas in left, it's kind of just like a, as to whether or not he will be able to stay in center, though, don't really know. You know, he was a kind of biggish kid to begin with, and 2 years have passed, and whether or not he's put on, you know, good weight or bad weight on top of those 210 pounds will make a lot of difference. Hopefully he didn't have quarantine weight or anything like that. But I mean, definitely a fun guy to dream on.
Yeah, he's like, he might be, I can't even tell you what order I had them in on my list because it just didn't really matter to me, but he might be my favorite one just in terms of the final and potential end product, like little dynamo of a dude running around in center field with good power and speed. It's just super fun.
Yeah, agreed, agreed.
I also think he's clearly the best player that we've talked about so far.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is why he's ranked 21.
No, like I don't even think it's close. Like, yeah. Because there's already tools that we've seen that are exciting. And at least for me, I'd rather a player have the elite bat speed and you teach him the plate discipline than the other way around, because I feel like it's a lot easier to develop someone's plate discipline.
Yep,
you could, that's something that you could really mold into someone, and people even mold it in the higher levels. I mean, sometimes it doesn't happen and you end up Ahmed Rosaro-ing your way through the league where you just swing at everything. But sometimes guys thrive even though they don't have it, even though that's rare, and sometimes you could teach it to those to guys. So I'd rather him show the elite bat speed already and the plus power and stuff like that. Like, that's fun. And that's stuff that, like, this is the first guy that I could see really skyrocketing with a full season, like a minor league season. I could see him just going off and hitting a bunch, and then we're talking about him way higher next year.
Yeah, definitely a good point about the he is the first guy with a bona fide loud tool. I mean, yeah. Gilliam has a plus curveball,
well,
but the rest of the package is you know, and he's on the, and especially compared to these other players, he's on the older side. Jordani Ventura, it's just kind of all, you know, a solid base, but it's all projection. Andy Rodriguez, you know, same thing. It's just, okay, he's a catcher that could move. It's interesting, but there's not much substance to it. And Consuegra, you know, very similar to Hernandez, except that, you know, the bat is not as loud.
And he hasn't played in, like, 2 years.
Right, and yes, and like, he has not played for two seasons.
That's really hard to parse, but, yeah. I feel like this is the first guy that we really have, like, a set tool, like a set base of skills that we could see grow and see turn into a real prospect soon.
And like you said, power is not something that can necessarily be taught. So if he's showing it, then he has it, and you just work around that.
You start building up the rest of his game. And that's I'd rather build from there.
My counterpoint would be just like the body-based concerns knock him down in terms – like I think the downside risk is – then again, the downside risk for all of these guys is not a major league player, so
– Right. I mean, the odds that – we'll be honest. I mean, Gilliam probably has the best chance at maybe 70% chance that he sees major league action in some capacity. And that's just a random number I'm pulling out of my ass, but just based on where he is. Yeah, but that's just based on, you know, he's a high-level reliever. And those guys are very fungible and can just get swapped in and out and at any point. But the rest of these guys are barely in the system. You know, they barely have their feet in the door. So a lot can go wrong in the 5 years, give or take, that, you know, they need to develop.
Yep.
That said, I find your argument convincing, and I'm looking back at my list now. I definitely didn't put too much thought into how I sorted the outfielders, but I think you're, and I could have Hernandez like towards the bottom of my outfielders, but I think your argument is reasonable for why he should be higher.
It's that's something we'll, I guess, we'll go on our last podcast. Mm-hmm. Do we have any regrets? I'm sure we all have a lot.
The second I like, every time I am working on my list, if I just look away for 2 seconds and look back, I have regrets. So yeah. it's impossible.
Yeah, at a certain point, you just got to take it away from yourself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Move on. I mean, I guess 2020 gives us kind of an out with all of that we could say, well, it's just a weird year anyway.
Are you saying we get a mulligan, Steve?
Yeah, we could sleep at night and not have to worry.
Also, no. Conversely, when one of our 23rd prospects pops, we're like, see, I told you.
I knew it.
Yeah. When no one knew that, so. Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, when, you know, 14th ranked, 16th ranked, whatever, Jacob deGrom becomes Jacob deGrom, then everyone's like, you guys suck. So
yeah, that's true.
It happens.
I mean, we do suck.
Yeah, I was about to say, we do suck anyway, so that works out well. Harsh, but fair. Speaking of suck, let's end things now with the Wilponery of the week.
Oh.
I think that the Wilponery of the week definitely goes to this dude named Steven Brandenburg, who is a pharmacist in Wisconsin. Have you guys heard this story?
I was going to make a joke about whether he wrote some mediocre classical concertos, but this story was horrible.
Yeah, basically he was arrested early in the week for intentionally spoiling over 500 doses of the coronavirus vaccine. He just basically took them out of the fridge on purpose and left them out overnight so that they would become deactivated or whatever the terminology would be, inert.
Who the hell kind of anti-vaxxer becomes a pharmacist?
Yeah, right. A longest con possible, and the most expensive con possible.
No kidding.
Probably has a positive ROI though.
Not anymore.
Yeah, true.
Well, we don't have any motives yet. The police wouldn't even like release his name. It took basically, you know, like what the hell is it called? Reddit found it, you know, they cross-matched the arrest records and, you know, people that have pharmacist license in Wisconsin or whatever the city was in Wisconsin, but.
Never underestimate the ability of bored nerds on the internet to find out information.
It is the truth. But apparently this dude is going through a divorce before all this happened.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if not, this would definitely be a good reason to get divorced from him, but. He was going through a divorce, and he already successfully petitioned the court once to deny his wife to have visitation rights to their kids because of COVID-19. So it doesn't seem like a huge leap that he thought he could indefinitely, like, keep the kids from her by just thinking that he could give inert vaccines to everybody and keep the pandemic going. Like, that's fucking dumbass psychopathic shit. If that's like the case.
Yeah.
And wow. There's no other info out there that he's like, you know, a big on the anti-vaxxer web or anything like that. Maybe it will come out. Who knows? But.
You know, I almost wanted to say this was too harsh to call Wilponery, but then I remembered the whole like Caster Gene situation. I'm like, okay, no, Jeff would do something stupid like this if he had the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it is terrible news. You know, it is terrible news because obviously people are, you know, dying at thousands at a time and have been. So, like, it's not something to joke about or whatever, take lightly. But yeah, like if that is his actual motive to either A, because he's an anti-vaxxer, which is dumb in and of itself because
that's
it's
just a level of narcissism that's
right
wild.
Yeah, and that would be a level of narcissism that Jeff Wilpon would have, thinking that he could single-handedly affect everything by, you know, his dumbass actions.
His genius actions, because it's his internal monologue, right?
His big
right.
brain.
Big brain, excuse galaxy's me. Brain actions from Jeff Wilpon.
Freaking Jeff Wilpon.
Everyone get your vaccinations. I got mine a couple like last week because.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm at the hospital constantly. So.
No, yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Well, if anybody has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complexqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at El Vlahos 343. Ken is at Ken 1191. And Thomas is at Sad Met Season SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week to further dissect the 2021 Mets top prospect list. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.